Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Abraham Lincoln stated, discourage litigation. Persuade your neighbors to compromise whenever you can. Point out to them how the nominal winner is often the real loser in fees and expenses and waste of time. As a peacemaker, the lawyer has a superior opportunity of being a good man or woman, I'll add. It has been shown that parties generally end up dividing their assets along the same lines, regardless of whether they mediated or fought them out in court. Waging an expensive court battle means only one thing for certain: you're reducing the assets that you're fighting over. People are cashing in their retirement, maxing out credit cards, and borrowing money from friends and family, all based on conflict and fear. Some divorces can cost upwards of $100,000, and most contested divorces can easily cost each party $15,000 to $25,000. If this is all true, then why do people continue to engage in painful litigated divorces that leave children and individuals traumatized? Why can't they let go of their anger and work toward a friendly separation? On today's program, Anchorage mediators Angela Hammond and Glenn Kravitz join me to answer these questions and to discuss the causes and consequences of conflict and the art of mediation. Angela and Glenn, appreciate you guys taking the time to join me today.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
Did I get your name right, Glenn?
Yes, Kravis.
Kravis. Okay. Mm-hmm. I meant to ask that ahead of time. I want to take just a second to remind listeners that you can reach us locally by calling 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or if you're outside of the Anchorage area, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us is to email your questions at line1@alaskapublic.org. You gotta spell out line one, L-I-N-E-O-N-E. If you have a question about divorce or how mediation might work for you in your situation, please call in with your questions or comments so we can get you on the air with our experts. All right. Before we get into mediation and conflict and divorce, can each of you take a minute to give us a little background educationally and what you're doing professionally and why mediation, why a career in conflict?
Well, I got started in mediation. I worked in the legal field. I've been working in the legal field for a few years and decided that I wanted to help people and wasn't feeling like my position in the legal field was conducive to that. So I went back to school, got a master's degree in negotiation and dispute resolution and learned more about it and, felt like it was just the right thing for me at the time. But since then, I know for a fact it is, and I really, really love and enjoy working with people in this way. And it can be very rewarding. So I'm glad I'm working in this field.
And what's your current role in mediation? What are you doing professionally?
I still work in the legal profession. I still work for a law firm. And I'm also a court contractor. I do mediations for the court. And I also have a private practice as a mediator. And mostly I'm just focusing on custody and divorce mediation.
Okay. Glenn?
Yeah, thanks. I've been a lawyer since 1981, graduated from Duke Law School. I've had a week to recover from the early exit from the NCAA tournament, mm-hmm. Which is why I was happy to still be able to make your show today. And I got interested in mediation probably in the late 80s as a result of some of the legal work that I was doing at the time. And I can still remember in my mind the last custody dispute that I litigated, and we were the, quote, winners of that dispute, mm-hmm. and I looked over, I was still in lawyer mode at that time thinking, oh, this is great, we won, and I looked at my client, the parent, the dad in that case, and he looked like he'd been run over by a truck. And I looked over at Mom, and of course she was devastated, and I just thought, this is insane. This is a horrible way to resolve conflict. Conflict is a part of life, but this is not a healthy process for resolving conflict. And I started looking into mediation then. And I started taking a number of trainings in mediation, and I've been mediating for close to 30 years now.
Okay, are you still doing litigation, or
nope.
is just exclusively?
Nope. I've recovered from that.
Okay.
I do not litigate at all. I don't miss it one bit. I still do some legal work, but I tend not to litigate anymore.
Okay, let's start off with conflict. What is conflict? You mentioned something important. You said that conflict is natural. It's part of the human experience. It's something that we need to get along, to survive, to make our needs met, to stand up for what's right. So conflict is pretty natural, and it's healthy, and it's necessary. When do you guys get involved?
Just to go back for a moment about the conflict, what I've learned is that, we all are capable of conflict, as you said. I mean, it's just a part of the human condition. And what I've learned about it is that most of the time, and I'll speak for myself, when I'm involved in a conflict, there's a lot of emotions involved with that. It's probably fear-based. It's, I've got some, maybe I feel guilty. Maybe I feel shameful. I don't know exactly what I'm, at the time, I'm feeling probably a myriad of these things. And I'm thinking with the right side of my brain, the right hemisphere, which has to deal with how I react to it, those feelings, those emotions. And so that's where I find most people are when they are in the middle of a conflict. They're not thinking about resolving it. They're just really focused on the core of that conflict. And it's really hard to get from right brain to left brain to start thinking logically about that conflict. So where we come in is to try and help people move from the right brain to the left brain, thinking logically, making agreements that are to benefit them, to benefit the family. It depends on what the conflict's about. But that's, I feel like, my role as a mediator.
It seems like a lot of conflict is, as you mentioned, fear-driven. I'm not going to have enough money. I'm not going, especially in divorces, I'm going to lose the kids. How am I going to survive? And being alone for the first time and giving up your dreams, it really is like a death, and it's a huge adjustment. So this fear is seems like protective in the fight or flight sense of sort of channeling up our energies to survive. And it tricks our rational self into dropping its role.
Yeah, and I think there's another aspect to it as well, and it's the the difference between being stuck, because we can't stop looking backwards, and the ability to move forward and to envision where do we go from here. And I think Angela and I and other mediators get involved where folks are having trouble moving forward. And so what a mediator can help folks do through questions and through facilitating the conversations that happen in mediation is help people begin to figure out how to move forward.
People come to you, I assume, with positions of certainty in their own experience of what's happening in the relationship. And so your job is to sort of bridge that gap, or to help people maybe question their own level of certainty, because when certainty kicks in, the logical, rational part of the brain that looks for problems and solutions kind of shuts off. So that's seems like a tricky spot for you guys to be in. And how do you navigate that?
Yeah, I think that happens in some cases. I think there are other situations where people don't have certainty. They have confusion. They have, I don't know what to do. And so the process, I think, can help people think more clearly about what their options are for moving forward. But I think you're also right that there are other people who come in just absolutely certain that they're right about whatever it is. It isn't so much that in mediation the mediator necessarily tells somebody that they're wrong. It's more an opportunity for becoming aware, I guess, through the mediator's questions and through the conversation that happens in mediation, that there might be more than one way of looking at something. And Well, you know, something I tell people all the time is, wow, you know, that's great, but, you know, you know, life would be really simple if you were negotiating with yourself, but you're not. You're negotiating with somebody who looks at things and sees things here a little bit differently than you do.
Yeah, The Anatomy of Peace, which is a really good book, describes conflict as, you know, the question is that they ask is, have you ever been in conflict with someone who believed they were wrong? And, you know, it does take two people believing in their position in order to create conflict. So mediation is simply the softening of that. Or let's talk a little bit about the difference between mediation, arbitration. A lot of people maybe have heard the term arbitration in baseball back in the day when they were doing that. But what's the difference between arbitration and mediation?
Well, in arbitration, it's you're talking about the conflict in front of a person or a panel who has the ability to be a decision maker or is a fact finder and can evaluate the conflict and then tell the people kind of almost like a judge how this should be resolved. In mediation, it's facilitating a conversation between the parties in hopes of, you know, helping them get to an agreement, something that works for their dynamic.
So it's not a lot different than therapy, doesn't
Well, actually it is.
Well, explain, because that's kind of that's what you do in couples therapy, is you try to get them to come to some sort of middle ground or be able to see the other person's perspective.
It's really interesting that you said that, because one of the things that I do after hours is I teach a mediation class at the university in the human services department. And one of the challenges that the students have every semester is wrestling with that fuzzy line. Am I asking that question as a mediator, or am I asking that question as a therapist? And on the other end of the spectrum, sometimes there are questions about mediators who might be stepping over a line and are acting more like lawyers than mediators. So, you know, the lines can be a little fuzzy sometimes at both ends of that spectrum. But I guess one difference between mediation and therapy is, even though a lot of the techniques may be similar, I think maybe the end is a little bit different. The purpose might be a little bit different. So the focus in mediation might be more towards the where do we go from here? How can we reach an agreement? Which might be a little bit different than what the purpose of therapy or counseling might be.
And you're not necessarily resolving old wounds or, you know, trying to get people feeling better. We're really looking to get people cooperating better and functioning better as as a parenting group, or
we're trying to help people reach an agreement about something, and in the process of that they may end up feeling better, which is great. It does happen in mediation where people do actually end up feeling better, but there are other mediations where that doesn't happen. But either way, the purpose is to help people find an agreement.
And I tend to try and work with a couple or a group in explaining it like we're talking about business, you know, and sometimes that can take the emotion out of it, and people are, you know, they kind of get that, you know, here we're talking about agreements, and it's, you know, we're looking at it and how it's going to benefit the situation and not so much, you know, my position or your position, but how is this going to benefit all of us? And I think that you kind of have to switch hats a little and look at it from a business sense sometimes.
Maybe. And then there are other mediations where the emotion is just an essential component of the dispute. And not excluding the emotion so much as embracing it in a way, but then reframing it so that people can figure out where do we go from here, given how you're feeling. Rather than dismissing how you're feeling, given how you're feeling, where do we go from here?
Yeah, and a lot of people need to be heard.
Yeah.
And And that's important. You can hear and validate and understand the feelings and then get back to, well, this is the situation at hand. Mm-hmm. We still have problems.
We still have a problem that needs to be solved.
That needs to be resolved. And you made a good point talking about proposals and positions. You know, like, there's a big difference when somebody says, you will not ever take the kids out of the country, and somebody says, I get really uncomfortable when, you know, the kids leave the country. And there's a difference. And so getting people to change their language is an important part of that process as well. I do need to remind people who might be tuning in late, my guests today are Anchorage mediators Angela Hammond and Glenn Kravitz. We are discussing the causes and consequences of conflict and looking at why mediation might be a cheaper and less painful path to conflict resolution if you're going through one or getting engaged in one. You can reach us with your questions or comments. Our local phone number is 550-8433, or call us toll-free outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us is to email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So why does divorce create such intense emotion and feeling? Why is it so difficult? This is one of the most challenging conversations I have in my office ever, is somebody's getting ready to divorce and the things flare up and people are looking at it from different sides. Why is it such a trigger for so many people?
It's a huge loss. It's a huge loss. I mean, the trust that you had in somebody, gone. The ability to communicate, ruptured. Without trust and communication, everything seems more difficult. You're experiencing this loss of something that you really counted on in life. And at the same time that you're processing this loss, that you're grieving for this loss, you're also being asked to make these humongous decisions about maybe your children, your finances, your future, how you're going to live, how you're going to afford things 5 years from now, 10 years from now, maybe 30 years from now. So you're being challenged to engage in planning on all sorts of levels at the same time that you're going through this tremendous grief.
Well said. And I think many times my experience is that this is the separation part, whether they realize it or not, has been going on for quite a bit of time. And by the time they get to the divorce, you know, or someone says it, there's some hurt feelings there. There's some high emotions at that point.
I had one person tell me that it would have been a lot easier if their spouse had died. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't from a position of malice, you know, or hatred at that point. It was just like, wow, the stuff I went through and having to look, if he had died, I just could have just been sad.
Yeah.
And not had it all mixed up with anger and loss of this, you know, dreams and betrayal and all the things that you mentioned. Let's go ahead. We have a caller. You're on the air. Go ahead. Don, you're on the
Hello.
Air. Hey, Don, you
Hello.
There? Go ahead.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. You caught me off guard there. I was just the part she just mentioned about the loss and everything and the grieving went on for a long time. I've been divorced since 78, and until I went through some pretty tough times in 10, 12 years as a single parent, I, like some members of my own family, they could not understand why one of my uncles, who got married 20 or so, and he never saw his child. What had happened was they had a flare-up, they split up, got divorced, and the child was born apparently after the divorce or pretty close to the time of the divorce. And he went to one coast and she went to the other is what it boiled down to. And he had a, you know, when it came time to retire, he had himself a nice home, car, and everything else paid for. And he finally got married, but it was 3 decades later. It was too late to have any more kids. So it was a real mess.
Yeah.
And As for my own setup, well, yeah, I had a mess of my own, too. It cost me dearly in many ways. In some cases, it was almost three decades before the kids and I got to see each other again at all. And I got dragged through the courts up in Pierce and went all the way into criminal trial and everything else. Accusations flying like crazy. And when I made my initial call on this, my main question was, how much problem do you people have as negotiators or facilitators, whatever? How much problems do you face as far as getting integrity to stand up and for people to come out and say, well, yeah, you know, I shouldn't have been doing this or that, or I wasn't fair about this part or that part, and especially if there's something involved like substance abuse? Because I had a nasty time with it, is all I can tell you. And the only thing I'll say safely and sanely is the substance abuse problem was not mine. But there was an awful lot of denial in there on the part of some people who claimed they were trying to help. And, I mean, I was totally outgunned because she had a hell of a big family up here and I had nobody.
All right, Don, you bring up a really good point, and I think I'd like to just elaborate on it for a minute. So thanks for the call. I think the things you're asking about is, like, when there's substance abuse, when there is a divorce and people pick sides. I mean, that's one of the problems with this is the ugliness that gets involved. It not only tears the nuclear family apart, but it spreads out into extended family, and you lose relationships that are years. Friendships, friends are forced to pick sides when the conflict goes on. You know, I've seen these custody evaluations where, you know, like, your friends are testifying at that, you know, this guy that you were okay with for 10 years when your kids were growing together and you went to soccer games with is now a jerk, you know, or he's abusive, or you even have to ask your friends and family to do that. So a litigated divorce, I mean, the destruction on kids, the exposure to adverse childhood experiences, the fighting, kids having to choose sides on which parent they want to be with. I mean, it just, the list goes on and on, and the penalties and the cost go on for decades sometimes. I mean, I have grown up people in my office all the time talking about their parents' divorce and what their father did to their mother or their mother did to their father. And one of the interesting things that Don's phone call brought up for me is this report I read fairly recently that a lot of fathers who were kind of the deadbeat dads, that was one of the terms back in the 80s and 90s, they had been alienated from their kids. They're, you know, many of their spouses accused them of battery and abuse and trauma, and the courts were very much leaning towards a lot of, you know, the female side and protecting. And a lot of men got shut out and fought for a while, and then and women too. And this goes both ways. And we're talking about high conflict divorces with lots and lots of damage. And that's what mediation, I hope, is what it's supposed to help alleviate some of. Divorce is hard. What do you guys do differently than, I call it the divorce machine, and I see it over and over. I'm sure there's good stories where it goes smoothly and everybody, but it seems very adversarial, and the mediation way seems more collaborative. Angela, you want to speak to that a little bit? What's the difference?
Well, I feel like not all divorces are high conflict, but the ones that we see probably are, you know, headed that way anyway. And, you know, like I said, much of that stuff is going on, the feelings, the hurt, whatever it is that is causing the divorce now has been going on for some time, and people either they don't know how to identify it or they don't want to talk about it or seek help to try and fix things before it gets to that point. And then by the time it gets to mediation or court, it's people are just really fixed on their positions, and it's just really hard to get them moving to more collaborative space. But I think that's what, you know, our job is, what we're trying to do. And, you know, we get a lot of very high contentious cases, and I would say Once you're able to sit down with people and give them information and hear them, have some empathy, give them some attention and respect, I think people start to transition a little bit more over to that left brain and are more willing to collaborate.
You know, process matters, is what I would say. Process really matters. And I think what Angela is getting at is, you know, a lot of what our caller was describing even was a really bad situation in the family context, no doubt, but also a situation that was aggravated by the process that people encountered, the adversarial process that people encountered litigating through these sorts of issues. And what mediation does is it offers people a completely different process. It's not an adversarial process. Yes, people will be angry with each other. Yes, people will have conflict within the context of mediation. But there are constructive ways of addressing conflict, and there are destructive ways of addressing conflict. We offer a constructive way of addressing conflict, not by avoiding it, not by pretending it's not there, but by helping people talk about it in an environment that is less adversarial so that they can actually figure out how to move forward.
All right. We have another caller. Alex, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Thank you. My question is more, I guess, directed towards you guys in that, how do you as facilitators and counselors deal with the aftermath of consistently having to deal with situations and divorces that maybe don't go smoothly, or there's a lot of contention and conflict, and there may be even traumatic things that happen in the course of that process? So how do you as the facilitators of that deal with, I guess, for lack of a better word, the effects of that? And then I'll take the answer off the air.
Yeah, the effects of that on us as providers. I wish I had jumped in there a little quicker and got the question, but is it about our self-care as people who work in this high conflict, or is it how do you deal with the aftermath of the divorce with the kids? And we can answer both of those questions. So Glenn, why don't you start us off with the lawyer side of it? How do you deal with self-care and making sure that this stuff doesn't go home with you?
I bike a lot.
Okay.
As Angela knows, although I'm not on my bike today, but I bike a lot. I also enjoy comedy. And I think all of us who are in this field find ways also to connect with each other so that as mediators, as a profession, we're developing our profession and we are we're able to get support and strength from each other as a profession, as professionals.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I look at it from, I'm fascinated. I'm not internalizing it and taking it personally. I want to analyze it and dissect it and kind of understand people's positions and where they're coming from and the core of the anger and the hurt. I don't take the process personally, even if it doesn't work out, and sometimes it doesn't. But I always try to, talk about the positives. So if, say, the couple comes together and they say, well, you know, I think we're just going to go to court. You know, I try I ask and try to point out that, you know, it's not all lost here because maybe you guys learned a little bit more about each other's position. Maybe you learned a little bit more about communicating. And so I like to see it as they got something out of it. They gained something from the mediation process and weren't left with as much or more confusion than when they started the mediation process.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff because I always tell people I have enough of my own problems. I don't need to borrow yours, right? I mean, that's as far as the self-care stuff goes. It is like a puzzle. I mean, you really feel like you're working with a system, and the challenge is to figure out what it is that you can tweak in that system that will make it better and make it operate more efficiently. So as far as the kids go, the leftover, the aftermath, I mean, I could have a whole show on the the impacts of divorce and the kids with depression and anxiety and conflict with their parents and failing grades and drug use and promiscuity and all sorts of behavioral problems that come in hand in hand with high conflict divorce. The higher the conflict, the divorce. Sometimes, you know, I got kids in my office, the parents have been going on these high conflict divorce for 4 and 5 years. They've already been divorced and they can't stop. And the kids are so done with it and so over it. Or they've come to hate one parent based on the other parent's feelings, and they've aligned with one. And those are very toxic on kids and well into adulthood. So the consequences are significant for children and for the individuals who go through that. As Glenn pointed out, looking down at his two clients who, even as the winner, just looks devastated. Like, as you don't win anything. So that's kind of, it's a tough spot, but if we can do something to make it a little bit better. So right now, we're at the halfway point of our show, so we're going to go ahead and take a short break. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSK Anchorage. My guests today are Anchorage mediator Angela Hammond and Glenn Kravitz. We are discussing the nature of conflict and why mediation might be a cheaper and less painful alternative to litigation. If you have a question for us or a comment about today's topic, our local number is 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll return to our conversation and take some more of your calls. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, my guests today are Anchorage mediators Angela Hammond and Glenn Kravitz. We are discussing the nature of conflict and why mediation might be a cheaper and less painful alternative to litigation. Remember, you can email your questions or comments about today's topic to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call locally at 550-8433 or toll free at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember the show repeats tonight at 8, so if you're listening to this on Monday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording and we won't be able to accept phone calls. All right. I'd like to get into a little more about the divorce truths and sort of, you know, myths. I started out with divorces end up being about the same, whether you hire a fancy, you know, a team of fancy lawyers or whether you sit down with a mediator in 20, 25 hours and knock this thing out. So is that true that there's, I mean, the law seems to be the law. So is it true that you can team up with a bunch of lawyers and you probably end up not too far off from where you end up with mediation?
Yes and no, in a way. The biggest difference is who decides, who has control over the decision making, and who lays out what the plan is going to be going forward. Is it going to be the participants, the people who are going through the divorce, or is it going to be the judge? So let me give you one example. If the result is going to be the same in the sense that the parties are going to split the marital estate 50-50, let's say, just as an example, are you going to have the judge decide how you get to 50-50 In other words, who gets what asset? Does the house get sold and proceeds split? Or are the parties going to be able to work out between the two of them how they want to get to 50-50 and who gets to keep what asset and what needs to be sold and who needs to pay how much to whom in order to get things to work out to 50-50? The same thing could be true in a parenting plan regarding children. Maybe the court is going to say, well, you guys are going to split custody 50-50 and here's your schedule. Which may or may not work for anybody, or the parents can sit down together and say, yeah, you know what, if we go to court, it's going to end up being 50-50, so let's figure out a 50-50 that actually works for our family.
And in mediation, you have a lot more, like just adding what Glenn was saying, you have that flexibility where if you're in front of a judge, the judge doesn't know the whole family dynamic and has to make a ruling based on law and not necessarily what would be in the best interest of that dynamic. The mediation gives people that ability to discuss those things.
So you're in litigation, you're giving up a lot of your power and your choice and your control.
Right.
Yes.
And sort of turning it over to, it seems like the lawyers really encourage folks not to talk. They're like, well, you got to go through me. I got to file a motion. And that can get really expensive really quick. And you soon lose touch with that other person. And it almost seems easier to do it through somebody else than face to face.
Boy, you know what? That last thing you said there, sometimes I hear that from people in mediation. This would be a lot easier if I just threw my hands up and let someone else deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Until they think through the consequences of that decision, it's easy to get, to think about getting up and walking out or walking away from a conflict, but it doesn't resolve the conflict. The conflict is still there. The issues still need to be addressed. And the question is, who's going to decide those things? Is it going to be you, or is it going to be the person wearing the black robe? One way or the other, these issues are still going to be addressed. And one of the things that we can do as mediators is help people weather the storm when they're feeling that way in a negotiation. We can help them weather that storm so that they can stay on top of what needs to get resolved so that they aren't giving up that power and control.
Yeah, part of that is what you're describing is that flight response to the conflict.
Yep.
And, trying to work with people, like you said, to get from that right brain response to the, I say this all the time, I'm sorry to repeat myself, but getting them from that right brain response to the logic, of, like you said, thinking about the consequences of just avoiding. And that's part of what our job is.
And a lot of times you get people who are really not very comfortable with conflict, and they are conflict avoidant or shut down or history of trauma, all sorts of things can go into that. And that creates an interesting dynamic. And sometimes those people, they just really would rather have a lawyer deal with it. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to think about it. They'll just tell me what I need to do. Okay, we have another caller. Jan, you're on line one. Go ahead.
I had a question about a pretty amicable divorce. My husband and I divorced when my son was 14, and it was one of those decisions we both had arrived at without a lot of conflict. And what we found was he was angered by the fact that we were not at war with each other, and he really acted out and is, in fact, now still acting out and has started, he's become a self-proclaimed pothead, blah, blah, blah. So it's very interesting that his anger was based on that we shouldn't have divorced, and he's, holding that against us, that we did it kind of in a more mature, amicable fashion. So do you have a response to that?
I'd have to have a lot more background, but I would say that, maybe he was upset about getting divorced. Maybe he didn't really want a divorce. Maybe there's a lot of stuff going on. He thought it was going to work out, and then it didn't. Glenn, you're nodding your head. What are your thoughts on that?
I see it all the time, where a couple comes in and one person wants to be done yesterday, and the other person can't believe that they're going to be divorced. And sometimes it's the man, sometimes it's the woman. It just depends on the couple. But it's not uncommon. And so one of the things we end up negotiating, if you will, in the mediation process is the pace of the conversation, the pace of the divorce.
And I, you know, I had another thought on that to build is maybe he's disappointed that they're not experiencing the divorce the way that he is. So I don't know if, you know, he just is, you know, wanting them to feel the turmoil that he feels. I don't know.
That's probably a great insight, because I think in traditional divorces, it probably in his own peer group, it's a lot more war, you know, mm-hmm. it's scorched earth, and we just really didn't want to do that. We felt that our job was to co-parent effectively and as civilly as possible. So we kept the war basically from his purview, and maybe that's upsetting him more than anything else, that he needed to see some more anger outbursts to say, oh, I see what's going on.
Or to validate his own right. feelings, yeah.
Okay. Or it might be a value judgment about divorce itself.
Mm, yeah.
Right. Okay, well, I appreciate the input. I thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Jan. And you bring up a good point that I want to point out that I'd like to speak to is when you are going through a divorce, it's really, really important that you pick your advocates well, the people that you talk to about your divorce. If you go to all your buddies, you know, from your drinking club and who are all divorced and failed miserably, they're going to say, oh, how could she do that to you? You know, but are you talking to people that are going to say, are you thinking about your kids? Are you thinking about longer term? Or are you just reacting in anger? Because I see a lot of people, and families are guilty of it. You line up your advocates, and then you are justified in your positions. I'm sure you guys deal in mediation all the time. Well, my brother says, I mean, can you speak to that a little bit, the problem with advocates, a negative advocate?
Yes, it's very real. I'm kind of chuckling as you say it, because I'm thinking back on particular mediations that I'm working on right now, where that is part of the dynamic. But I think part of what happens in mediation is people will speak to what they are thinking or feeling, and they will tell you where they're hearing it. And I think part of what we can do as mediators is suggest to people that they might want to get some more information from an alternative source, whether it's a lawyer who actually understands the mediation process and supports the process, isn't looking to generate World War III out of it, but would just sit down with somebody for a half hour and sort of explain what their realistic options are. Or perhaps it's talking with a counselor regarding some of the children's issues, or perhaps it might be talking to a financial planner or a CPA regarding some of their financial issues, but to just get some really good information, some good sources of information.
I often send people resources, links, journals that I've read, and just to give both sides of things, to provide them with education on studies and statistics and things like that. But you know, that reminds me of some of the most intractable conflicts that I've experienced, and most of that has to do with advocates, but it's also based on culture, different cultures, you know, but the parties are coming from different religions or cultural background, races, things like that. And that's a really tough one that, you know, that's, you know, there, it's possible to work through them, but those, you have to be mindful, definitely where people are coming from.
Deeply intergenerational cultural norms that, yeah, are tough to work around based on our model.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I do have an email I'd like to get to, which goes to my next question. Actually, don't both parties have to agree to the mediation process? What do you do if one of the parties refuses to participate? Well, then, Angela, like, what is it called then? If one doesn't?
I mean, that's an interesting question, because often I get referrals from the court where the judge will strongly suggest mediation, knowing that it has to be, both parties really have to be willing to do it. If one party's not willing, you just hope that eventually they'll come around. But no, I don't generally force it on anybody, really.
Same here. I agree with Angela. I think sometimes the reluctance of one party to mediate might be based on a misconception about what mediation is or how the process works. And sometimes just providing people with information, or here's something that sometimes works, is what, let's say one person contacts me because they're interested in mediating. So they call me and they ask me a little bit about the process and I answer their questions. And then I typically would ask, well, is when they say, well, let's schedule a first session, my first response is usually, well, has the other party also agreed to mediate? And when I hear, well, no, not yet, I usually follow up with, well, I'd be happy to answer any questions about the process that so-and-so has as well, just like I've spoken with you today. So please feel free to share my contact information with so-and-so, and I'd be happy to answer any questions they have. Usually when people find out what mediation is and how the process works, I think some of that resistance subsides.
It seems like a no-brainer. Want to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, my guests today are Anchorage mediators Angela Hammond and Glenn Kravitz. We are discussing the causes and consequences of conflict and why mediation might be a better alternative. You can reach us with your questions or comments in three ways. The local phone number is 550-8433. You can call us toll-free if you're outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Do judges ever get tired of dealing with people and say you're going to mediation, it's court-ordered? Like, is there a court-ordered mediation process? Is that a thing? Should it be if it's not?
Yeah. So I work, I do some volunteer mediation, small claims, and that's a little more strongly suggested. I think with the custody cases, many times, if the parties aren't represented, they would qualify for what is called an early resolution program through the court. And then, but I don't normally get a lot of, people don't normally resist that because it's sponsored by the court. They, my experience is that they usually give it a shot. So I think it's a mix on that regard.
Okay, I want to get to the process of mediation and what people could expect if they were to call one of you guys and ask to set up a mediation. But we got quite a few phone calls coming in, so we're going to go ahead. We've got Michael. You're on line one. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple related questions. One is, typically, what is the size of your caseload? How many couples are you working with at a time?
How many active cases?
How long does what's the average length of time the mediation lasts? How many weeks or sessions?
Okay, probably I'm not sure how many mediations I have going right now, Michael. But I can tell you a little bit about the process itself and the length of the process. So. And maybe Angela's practice is different than mine. Every mediator might do this a little bit differently. And so the question that you're asking is actually one that you should put to whatever mediator you're contacting as a possible mediator for you to see if it's a good fit for you. In my practice, I would say anywhere from one or two meetings on the short end to a half dozen meetings on the longer end. Most sessions last somewhere between 1 and 2 hours. We can vary that according to the needs of the parties. I think a lot of times going longer than 2 hours can kind of burn people out, so we want to be careful not to do that. However, if people are traveling for the mediation or there's some other time constraints that they're dealing with, we can certainly adjust that.
Yeah, mine's similar, and sometimes I'll do online mediations as well, and that process almost, it works about the same, except that people are mediating from their home or work or wherever it's more convenient, and sometimes that's a little less time-consuming, so I try to offer that whenever possible. But same process. I think it's pretty generally the same across the board.
All right, thanks.
And what are the percentages of people who, when couples engage, what are the percentages approximately of those who complete mediation versus those who end up going on to litigate and, you know, they drop the mediation?
I think the overwhelming majority of people who come to mediation get things worked out. I don't keep statistics. I don't know. But it feels to me like, you know, the overwhelming majority of people get things resolved in mediation.
Agreed. I don't keep statistics on mine either.
Yeah, so you don't have a good answer for that. But if both people are engaged in the process, you can usually get somewhere. It's more difficult when we got high conflict cases, which is a different conversation. All right, Michael, thanks for the call. Moving, let's go ahead and stay with the phones. We got John, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hi there. I have a situation where mediation wouldn't have worked. My ex-wife and I are now very amicable and travel to visit grandchildren and everything together, though we're still separate and divorced. But the situation was such that we went into the process when one party feels very badly abused and wants to use the process punitively. Is that something where mediation just can't help that? Or is there a way that you have to defuse the inclination to use the process for to punish the other person?
That's a really good question. Thanks for the call. Glenn, you got it?
Sure. The answer, unfortunately, is it depends. But I think what it depends on is whether or not the participants are genuinely trying to resolve whatever needs to be resolved in such a way that causes no harm to either individual. I mean, you know, one of our mantras, just like with other professionals, is do no harm. And so at the outset of the process, we're trying to assess, perhaps through individual conversations with the folks that we're working with, whether or not this process is a good fit for the people who are coming into it. We don't want, and we would not engage in a mediation where somebody is being bullied into an agreement or being emotionally abused in some way just to reach an agreement. That's not what this is about. We're not about making people do things. We want this to be a truly voluntary process for everyone who's coming to the table. So I think we have an ethical obligation as mediators. And there are some cases where the abusive nature of the relationship is such that this is not an appropriate process for those folks.
Right.
But there are other cases where there is a history of domestic violence, even where it might still be possible to do the mediation and preferable for the victim, who has the choice as to whether or not to mediate, to still engage in the process. But it's a conversation that needs to happen at the front end of the process to assess whether whether mediation is appropriate for those individuals.
How would somebody, Angela, maybe a question for you, how would somebody convince a hesitant partner to engage in the process or to at least start or just talk to a mediator? How would you do that if somebody's like, nope, I got a lawyer and I'm going, and you really don't want to? How would you talk to a spouse or encourage them to speak with a mediator?
I think I would provide them with information. Sometimes that can make all the difference. And also, you know, sometimes run through some scenarios. Like, you know, this is what you're looking at as far as costs and the time and the power, losing power in that situation. So sometimes that will work. Sometimes people are just determined to move forward in a litigation, though. Yeah.
All right. I got time for one more call. Penny, you're on line one. Go ahead.
My question is, do you think there are some people who should never marry, period? I've been married three times, three children, three horrible divorces, and from a 20-year vantage point, I think it was not the fault of the men or of me, and I only wish I had learned this about myself before I ever got married. It hurt three children, it hurt three men, and of course it hurt me. I don't believe that I am the marrying kind, and never was. I wish there was a class that people could take young to find this out about themselves.
That's a great call, Penny. I guess I'll take that. I don't think there's anybody that necessarily is not, you know, is not the marrying kind. I do think it's important to know yourself in a relationship and to get to know the partners. I know people who come from a lot of abuse and trauma and backgrounds where their parents had multiple divorce situations. The divorce rates are exceptionally high for those people. So there certainly are challenges in marriages, and some people are, I think, better equipped to deal with them emotionally, and getting involved with a therapist. I think that's a good thing. But Penny, I think everybody has the right to pursue it, and you wouldn't have your kids without those marriages. And so I don't know if you'd do it any other way, but thanks for the call.
Well, you're right, but I'm so happy single.
Well, enjoy it, and enjoy the rest of it.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. We just got a couple of minutes left. You guys want to give us something kind of to take home about mediation? What's important in considering mediation, and why should you do it instead of going down the litigated path?
Well, just for all the, you know, everything that we've spoken about, with the high costs and how time consuming it is and how damaging it can be to the whole family, you know, through the whole litigation process. But, I think that if nothing else, mediation just helps. I think people learn a lot about themselves and also the person that they're maybe divorcing or parenting with through that mediation process. It's. I feel like it's really conducive to that learning. And if it doesn't work out, they still have court. They can still move forward with court. But giving it a shot, I think, I don't know how much harm it would cause versus all the knowledge you gain.
It might save a lot of pain and money.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, I agree with everything Angela just said. It's voluntary. It's confidential. You're in charge of the decisions. It's a lot less expensive than the alternative. And it's a lot quicker than the alternative as well. And I think, again, it kind of goes back to conflict being part of what happens in human life. I mean, you can't avoid conflict. I mean, there is conflict. The question is, how are we going to deal with it?
I will say that modeling conflict resolution skills for your children is super important, and this is a great way to do it because they may have to deal with a divorce themselves. Thank you both for joining me today. I appreciate having you.
It was nice to be here.
Thank you.
All right. Today's conversation and all of our past Line One programs can be found on our archives. Just go to alaskapublic.org homepage and find the link to our show under the radio tab. If you'd like to continue today's conversation, you can join KSK on Facebook. Once a year, Line One, we feature a program addressing listener questions about the foot and ankle. On the next program, Dr. Woodard and Anchorage podiatrist Ken Swayman discuss foot health. That's Monday, April 3rd at 2 p.m., repeating the same evening at 8 on FM 91.1 Alaska Public Media. Dave Waldron was our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. For all of us at Line One, thanks for taking the time to listen. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.